We're continuing our look at the candidates running for the leadership of the UCP here in Alberta, and we are pleased to be joined on the line right now by Danielle Smith. Some of you may recall her as the former leader of the Wild Rose and the official opposition, and well, now she's running for the UCP. I guess, first of all, Danielle, thanks for taking the time to join us here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Kyle.
All right. Well, why don't we kind of guess, start right away? Of course, you've been kind of away from politics a little bit, but now you've kind of come back here as part of the running for the leadership of the UCP. What made you decide to, I guess, go as part of this leadership race?
Well, I did radio for 6 years. I was a host on Chorus Radio. I don't think the signal comes all the way up to where you are in your part of the province. But one of the things that I was able to do was just talk to Albertans for the last 6 years on every issue you could possibly imagine, call-in segments, texts, and emails, and I began to see that the current party and current leadership were losing touch and losing some of their support base. I thought, oh my goodness, if we end up with this vote splitting again, we're going to end up with Rachel Notley and the NDP forming government again. So I thought that what I could do by entering into the race is not so much drive for unity. It was not very popular, but I think in the meantime, people have now realized with the work that Brian Jean and Jason Kenney did in bringing the parties together that conservatives really do have more that unites them than divides them. We have to deal with some of those issues that has caused the party to split apart, and I think I can, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to jump back in, is to keep this party together.
Of course, I know you've been sort of kind of out traveling to different parts of the province over the last little while. What are some of the kinds of things that you've kind of heard from people out there?
The two main things that I think has caused us problems are number one, the turn that we took on the vaccine restrictions and vaccine mandates that came in September of last year. It really began dividing people along the lines of who's vaccinated and who's unvaccinated. It's broken down families, it's broken down relationships, it's caused kids to be ostracized at school and not be able to participate in activities. And I think we've got a burgeoning mental health crisis that has resulted from our approach over the last 2 years. So I've committed we are not going to do lockdowns again. We now know enough about this virus. We know that there are some effective remedies that we can use to make sure people do not end up getting hospitalized. And that's the approach that we've got to take. Make the vaccines available for those who want them and need them. But then let's just get back to treating it as endemic the way we do influenza, because this is going to, we're not going to get rid of it, so we have to learn to live with it. The other thing I've heard is on the issue of autonomy. We got a pretty strong mandate from the people that they wanted us to open up the Constitution when they said that they wanted us just to work to eliminate equalization from the Constitution, and we haven't acted on that. So that's the reason why I launched with the Alberta Sovereignty Act. That would be the first step in showing Ottawa our relationship is going to change. When we passed that equalization referendum, they gave us Environment Minister Stephen Guilbeault, who has done nothing but antagonize our province and put economic sanctions on us. We're drawing a hard line that the relationship's going to change. Those are two of the main things that I'm campaigning on, because those are the things that I've heard that Albertans are frustrated with.
And you kind of touched on it a little bit there. You know, the province does sometimes have a bit of a history/reputation of not always getting along well with the federal government and sometimes other provinces as well. What do you think you can provide to sort of repair the relationship and, you know, maybe make it a little more collaborative in a way?
I'm not interested in collaboration yet. I'm interested in respect. Right now, I'm interested in Ottawa treating us the same way they treat Quebec. No one in Quebec is sitting back, cowering and worrying the federal government is going to step in and shut down the aerospace industry, or shut down cement and aluminum plants, or shut down their hydroelectric power, or impose unfair taxes on them. Nobody in Quebec even dreams that would happen, because the Ottawa wouldn't dream of doing it to Quebec. We are going to be the second largest economy in the country. If we look at projections for population growth, by about 2050, we're going to be the second most populous province in the country as well. We have to stop acting like a junior player, and we have to start acting like a senior partner. And as soon as Ottawa realizes that we need to have a grown-up and more respectful relationship, then we can move to collaboration. But we can't as long as they're continuing to try to shut down our industries and impose economic sanctions against us. And what I say, because I know you've got a lot of farmers in the Peace Country there, it's not just the oil and gas sector that's hit. They're also telling our farmers that they have to reduce their fertilizer consumption by 30%. We're looking at around the world. Look at the Netherlands. There's an outright farmer protest happening because they've been told they have to reduce fertilizer use by 70%. I have no doubt that is the direction this government will go if they think that they can get away with it. We have to tell them, no, hard line. You're not going to get away with it. We're pushing back. We have the constitutional authority to develop our resources, and we're going to defend that.
Another thing that's been a major focus over the last couple of years is sort of the healthcare system in the province. And even before COVID, we saw a lot of the issues that we've seen recently with doctor shortages in rural communities. It's happened plenty of times around here, as a matter of fact. And what are some things that you think would like to see happen? And kind of, I guess, maybe in your platform as a kind of way to help sort of improve the healthcare system here in Alberta.
Dr. Raj Sherman was at one of my events. He was signing up signatures, and he wants to get into this race too. And he reminded me that one of the reasons why he left the PCs is he had a fundamental disagreement about centralizing into a single health super board. He said, you can't do that. You've got to maintain local community-based decision-making with local accountability. And so there are some things that you want to keep out of a centralized model. You want to have centralized procurement so you get the best price on drugs, your legal contracts, your payroll management and that sort of thing, IT. But the day-to-day operation of a facility needs to be left to local facility managers with local oversight from local people in the community. I have heard everywhere I travel about the number of hospital operating rooms that have been shut down and mothballed and turned into storage facilities or storage rooms, about whole wards or whole floors in hospitals that have been decommissioned. And yet we're now talking about surge capacity and how we would build it up. And even looking at, the government was even looking at having patients go to the Okanagan and surgical teams to deliver surgeries. That's bananas. We should be using our facilities here to full effect. So the first thing I'd want to do is send out a team of facility auditors to our 100 facilities, find out where we are not operating at full capacity, get those operating rooms back into service so that when we do have a surge, and we do every single year in the fall respiratory virus season, we can at least start using some of those rural hospitals to make sure that we continue doing treatments and surgeries and diagnosis so that we don't keep falling behind.
And finally, whenever we have a political guest join us here, we always like to throw in a little personal pitch, kind of show, hey, these politicians are people too. Now, when it comes to you, Danielle, I know you've been very busy with this campaign over the last little while, but on those rare occasions where you have some personal downtime, what are some things you got to do in odd moments when you're free?
You know, you're not going to believe what I was doing just before I came onto this call. My husband and I run a restaurant in High River. It's a railway dining car, and we are just so busy in the summer. So I had to go buy him some ice cream and catch them up on dishes and do some roll-ups before I said, but hon, I got to go. I've got an interview to do. So he said, come back. So I'll be going back to do some dishes this afternoon. That's what I tend to do in my spare time is work at the restaurant with my husband and do the accounting for it.
All right. We'll certainly let you get back to all that you got going on there. Danielle Smith, thanks for joining us here today.
You bet. Thanks, Phil.